everyone, and welcome back to Deadline City. We are your hosts. I'm Zoraida Cordova.
And I'm Danielle Clayton.
And this week we're going to the destination,
the bank,
because I think it's time that we talk about money. And nobody likes to talk about money, but I feel like it's really important to be transparent as we're trying to change the landscape of publishing. So it's time to talk money, money, money.
Right.
Money.
But before we do a deep dive into money, give me an update.
Give me an update.
What's going on in your life? Because my life sucks.
Right now I'm doing an update on all of my apps on my computer.
What I meant. What's wrong with you? What has quarantine done to you? It just made you so corny.
Do you realize that that is how I am?
Yes.
I think it's just accentuated it.
Quarantine has really brought out quite a bit.
Corny teen.
Yes, I hate it. Can you just tell me what's going on with your books, please? Thanks.
I'm evading. Well, I have the edits due for Incendiary 2. I know it's been a long journey. I feel like all of our listeners have been paying attention to us for a few months now, and have been hearing about Incendiary 2 and my struggle with it. But it's almost finished. I'm in the last round of edits before we go to copy edits. And so I'm feeling pretty good about it. Once I'm done with this, I'm going to have to take a 2-week reading break, and do some research on middle grade and cryptozoology. And then
cryptozoology. Okay.
Yes.
Can you tell our listeners what the heck cryptozoology is for those of us who never knew until they met you what the heck this was?
Yeah. Cryptozoology. Let me get you the legit definition so that I can be legit.
I thought you were a legit cryptozoologist.
Yeah.
Zoologist.
It is a pseudoscience.
Which means it's fake.
Listen.
Fake. Fakety fake fake.
According to Wikipedia, cryptozoology is a pseudoscience and subculture that aims to prove the existence of entities from folklore record, such as Bigfoot, the Chupacabra. And cryptozoologists such as myself refer to these creatures as cryptids. So mermaids, werewolves, things that go bump in the night, right? The Jersey Devil, all kinds of monsters really fall into that category.
So you're just call you Dr. Cordova. You've got a PhD.
I have a PhD. Well. Yep. I have a PhD in make-believe.
Okay. So you're going to take 2 weeks to do your reading. Oh, 2 weeks sounds so nice.
Right? I don't know if I'll actually get to do it, but it would be beautiful to go somewhere and just do this business.
I still have 2 books due. Mm-hmm. I turned one in, and I'm trying to hustle to get the other 2 in. And I have a short story due. And just like really serious admin stuff that I have to do. So I am in one book. I am finishing up the last 2 parts of it. So I can see the finish line, and it is just taking me forever to get there. And then the other one, I need to do my revision. I need to add like 6 to 8 more chapters. But yeah. I am exhausted.
I know. And I can hear it. I can hear it. You need a break.
Yeah.
And but there's no rest for the wicked.
There is no break because mama needs money.
Right. And on the subject.
Right. I need to be able to pay my bills, and I need to be able to pay off debts and, you know, keep myself alive. So speaking of such, let's talk about the basics.
Okay.
Okay. So you have written a book, and you have gotten an agent, and your agent has gone on submission and sold your book. And now you're taking a look at how much your book is worth, and you're going to be given an advance.
Can you tell everybody what an advance is? Publishers come to you with an offer. They would like to buy the rights to publish your book. They offer a certain number of money for an advance on royalties.
Yes.
Can you tell everyone what that means?
An advance on royalties is the money that your publisher gives you to secure the rights to your book for X amount of years. I feel like the base number of years is 7 years as a 7-year contract, right? Depending on the publisher and depending on the whatever negotiation you and your agent have come up with, right? So for this period of time, we will publish your book, edit your book, produce it, and turn it into the finished copy.
And market it.
And market it. So in exchange for that, the publisher gives you a check. Obviously, we'll talk about how the advance is split up. But it is a number that is agreed upon. And that's the thing. It is an agreed upon sum of money between you and your publisher to secure this contract. So now that means you can't sell it to anybody else. It is exclusively belongs to McNewYorkPublishing.com, right?
Right. And they have the license to do it. And so sometimes when you sell your book, your agent will negotiate for different kinds of rights. It could be world rights. World rights means that the publisher controls all of the different translation of your work in all of the territories.
Right.
They have partner, what's called partner publishers globally, but also they can sell the books to other publishers that are outside of their global network, but they own the rights and they get to exploit the rights. And usually if you're going to sell world rights, you want to get money, more money up front for that, because you're not going to be getting all of the different money from all of the different territories. The one nice thing about world rights is that when they sell your book in, let's say, in Japan, your book sells in Japan, and then your publisher and you, depending on what's in your contract, have a profit share of that sale. So as a writer's book sells in Germany or in Japan, and then a percentage of that money goes towards that advance. It's almost like
the U.S. advance.
The U.S. advance. Let's say they give you $20,000 for your book and they sell it in 10 territories. All of that money, part of it is going to go towards the advance that they've already paid you. It's sort of like, you know, it slowly can cancel it out. Sometimes you'll have earned out before you even earning out, meaning your advance is paid back to the publisher and you're in your royalty. You're able to earn royalties. So you can sell world rights. You can also sell world English, meaning that your publisher has the right to publish your book in English, in English-speaking territories. So like the UK, they can release your book in the UK market because they own the right to publish it in English-speaking markets globally. And so most of my contracts are world English.
Me too.
And then there's also North American rights.
I have one North American right. I have one North American right, and that is when, depending on the language, you can do Spanish, Canadian French, and English, because Canada does have a second language. And even though in the U.S. we don't have official languages, there's such a big Spanish-speaking population that some publishers will hold on to that North American Spanish. That's very rare, but I have seen it happen.
Right. And so there are lots of different, those are just three ways that your contracts can be structured. And so then, okay, I've got my book. Let's go with World English. My agent has now negotiated World English for me, and they are buying my book for $30,000. Okay. And so you get an advance of $30,000. But that payment is split up. So oftentimes, depending on the house, some houses split your payment into fours, threes, and twos. So I, all of my contracts, almost all of them, are in twos. So on signing, I get half of the money of that advance that was promised to me. So it would be $15,000. And then once I finish my manuscript and it's gone through all of its edits and it goes to copy edits, I would get the other payment, meaning we're on our way. However, all of those payments are less 15% because of agent. Your agent takes 15%. That is industry standard.
Mm-hmm.
Operating procedure.
If you are being charged by an agent more than 15%, then that is a problem, except for
subsidiary rights, which we will talk about.
Yeah. But your basic agent for a regular deal will charge you 15%.
Your literary agent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so then what happens is, so you're paid, you can get paid in halves. That's how I prefer it. You can also get paid in thirds, where you get a third of it when you sign your contract, you get a third of it when you hit copy edits, and you get a third of it when your book comes out. My first two deals were in thirds, and so that's what I was used to getting.
Mm-hmm.
What happens, and what can be stressful about that, is what happens when your book is bumped. So I sold The Bells in August of 2014. So I got a third of the money. But then I didn't go to copy edits until 2017.
Mm.
So because of a lot of various things with going on at my publishing house, so I had to wait from 2014 to 2017 to get the second payment. And then I got my third payment in February of 2018 when the book came out. So that is another payment structure and something to think about, that yes, $30,000 or $45,000 seems, yes, I got this money, but you're split out over time. Also, 30% of that, because we're self-employed, goes to taxes. So again, you start dwindling it. $30,000, then it's split into payments. Each payment is docked 15% for your agent, and it's docked 30% because you should be putting away 30% for taxes.
Right. Unless you're like me and just sort of do a Hail Mary.
I mean, I do a Hail Mary too at times. But
right, when it's necessary, because sometimes you just can't, right? And then you'll just owe the government more money at the end of the year.
Right, exactly. And there are some publishers that you are in force. You sign the contract and you get a payment. You go to copy edits and you get a payment. Your publication date comes and you get a payment. Your paperback comes and you get a payment. Oof, and so
that sounds terrible.
Well, I think it can also be depends on how high the advance is,
right?
Which we're going to talk about. So those are your basic ways of getting paid. And your advance literally is, I'm going to give you this money right now to seal the deal, to take your book off the table. I'm licensing it, and it's an advance on royalties, meaning that every book that when you come out with a book, you're in the red. You owe money. It's a loan. That's the way that I was taught to think of it. It is a loan. It is a loan that you want to earn back so that you can get into the earning zone.
Right.
Once you've hit the threshold.
Yeah.
And those advances are usually based on so many different kinds of factors. How much they think your book is going to make, how marketable it is, how commercial it'll be, how much they'll sell it. They do something called P&L sheets, where profit and loss sheets, where they think through what are the competitive titles for this book, where will it be in the market? And then they make it and they put it into some sort of mumbo jumbo equation and they come up with a number. And so it's all subjective and arbitrary because, as we're going to talk about, where the controversy comes in after we go through sort of the basic building blocks of everything. So your publisher comes back to your, you know, comes back with this mysterious number. And if you go to auction, other publishers are going to try to outbid each other with their numbers and drive up the price of the book, meaning, oh, everybody wants it.
Right. And so how funny is it to imagine one of these auctions? I used to think of it like people with paddle boards, right? Like a real, those real yeah. auctions were like, it's yes. It's like, do I have 10,000? Do I have 30,000?
Right here, 10,000.
But unfortunately, publishing is not as exciting as that. It's an email sent, and there are different ways to structure an auction. I feel like how many publishers have to be interested for it to be considered an auction?
Two or more. You can also get a preempt where someone comes in with a price to take it off the table so it doesn't go to auction. And so it's like, oh, I'll pay you this much. I'm going to inflate it so that nobody else can come in and get it.
Right. And that's such a gamble because right. what if publisher A says, I'll give you $30,000, but your agent says we can get more money.
Right.
And then what if it goes to auction and the first bid, if you don't set a floor, is 20,000. And so then that preempt goes away. Right. So it is such a gamble. And I feel like when you get to the stage of trying to sell your book, it feels like you're in a casino and you've never even learned how to shuffle a deck of cards. That's what it feels like to me when we go on submission, because I have no idea. It's Russian roulette. It's whatever, you know, game of chance happens, because we don't have a true industry standard of what people get paid, right? I have seen deals that are $3 million and I have seen deals that are negative $500.
Yep.
So it's bananas.
It is. And something else to think about, this is another phrase we're going to throw around as we're talking about this, is this idea of separate accounting. So once you sell your book and you get your advance, and everything is going along and your book comes out, you want something called separate accounting versus joint accounting. It means that if I have sold a series, each one of my books has an opportunity to earn out on its own merit. So The Bells gets to earn out, and The Everlasting Rose gets to earn out, and the third book gets to earn out. That is called separate accounting. So if The Bells sells a crap ton, and I can start getting royalties from The Bells. And then if The Everlasting Rose, they're sequels. They take a little bit longer. As that earns out, I'll get royalties. If I had something called joint accounting, it would mean that for my entire series, or however many books are sold at that time in that batch, they are jointly held together. And I cannot earn any royalties until all three of them have earned out. And that, I think, can set you up, because as we know with series, the first book always sells better than the other books. Mm-hmm. And if I have to wait for The Everlasting Rose and for my third book in the Bell series to earn out before I can see any royalties, that could be 10 years or 5 years from now. You never know. So I think that that's something else to always ask as you're trying to sell something. And once you have, asking for joint accounting and asking for the type of payment structure that works best for you and for your taxes and for your money flow, whether right. it's being paid in halves, being paid in thirds, or paid in fourths. Yeah. And there's so much controversy about this. You started hinting at it. We might as well deep dive into it.
Sure.
There was the viral hashtag created by L.L. McKinney and Tochi Onyebuchi, two of our favorites, called Publishing Paid Me. And a lot of people, and it was really for white people and non-black people to come out and tell what they've been paid by publishers and to be honest in this moment so that we could be transparent and showcase what the disparities are. I mean, we already know that there are disparities. These are things that we know. But to sort of see it also reinforces it. There are so many other metrics that we don't even get to talk about, which, you know, people can say, oh, this was an exercise, a futile exercise, right? I'm hearing that because there's so many other factors. What year if it was what publishing house, what agent, and no one's talking about the agents, yes, we can make claims that the data is compromised. But I do think that I think the whole exercise just gave us confirmation of a dirty truth that we hadn't talked about before.
Absolutely. And I want to first mention, in this moment, we're talking about how Black authors are paid so much lower than everyone else. And you can't use the one or two exceptions as a rule, right? Those are exceptions for other factors. And in publishing at the moment, Leon Lowe's data says that 5% of authors right now are Black. So you have that 5% and you're seeing advances at these levels, right? And then with literary agents, it's 4%. I'm going to put the statistics in our show notes. But the numbers are just not in favor of equity or equality.
Right. And I think that we have to get really, really honest and really, really uncomfortable. And so that requires people to put their cards out on the table. And it might be people can discount the data and say there are all these factors, but there's also the numbers, and the numbers don't lie. And the numbers show us that certain people's imagination, certain people's stories, certain people in general are more valuable monetarily than others. And I think that what makes this whole conversation really, really tough and controversial is thinking about who gets a shot, who gets invested in, right? So Black people weren't supposed to participate in the thread, but my pettibone got the best of me, and I saw all these big numbers, and I had to tweet about my debut fantasy that was bought before my first book came out, before I had a book scan, before I had any books under my name, and that I was paid $45,000. And I know people are like, oh, that's a great amount of money and all of that. And yeah, it felt like a great amount of money at the time. However, once you take 30% away for taxes, and once you take 15% away, I'm going to do that math for you, because I want you to think about that when, 15% of my advance, $6,750, went to my agent, right? So that leaves $38,250. And then times 30% of that, I have to put $11,000 away, about $11,475 away. So even if I just do $3,800 minus $11,500, that leaves me with $26,500. Mm-hmm. And that payment, that was split into three.
Yeah.
So, and over the years of 2014 to 2018. So it isn't a lot of money. I had four jobs at the time. And so I kept thinking, once I saw some of the other big advances, I was like, oh, wow. So other people can get invested in, and their books are worth $333,000 each versus my book is only worth $45,000. And these are huge numbers, and I am grateful for the numbers that I get, but I think that I am underpaid when I think about, and when I look at my contemporaries,
right?
They're paid for their stories. And I'm lucky that the Bells earned out pretty much overnight.
Right, before it even came out.
Right. So it's trucking along, but, it sucks.
It does suck.
How did you feel seeing all of the stuff going on?
I felt really awkward about it because, we're always taught like, oh, talking about money is tacky. But why is it tacky? Is it because it makes people accountable, or because it shows the disparity? Is it uncomfortable because we don't want to let an author know that is at the same publisher, Disney, doesn't want people to know that they paid another Lily White author three times as much as you?
Yes.
For a book that may or may not be better than yours.
Right.
And so is that why we don't want to talk about these numbers? Because the publishers get uncomfortable, because the agents don't want to hear from their other authors saying, well, you got her that much money. Why can't you get me that much money?
Oh, yeah. It is. It's real, because I saw some of my own agents, clients, my former agents' clients, and she got them so much more than me.
Mm-hmm.
And on the thread, and I was like, wow, I guess I'm like, gosh, white people just get so much more money. And then I know that people want to bring up the sort of tokens, right? They want to bring up the few people of color that have gotten big deals. But for every one of those, it's 10 white women that have gotten equally big deals and investment.
Right. When I saw my numbers, because I know for a fact that I'm not going to talk about The Vicious Deep because that even got less than Labyrinth Lost, but I will talk about Labyrinth Lost. My deal for Labyrinth Lost was $7,500. So I don't even want to do the 30% and the 15% for the agent. And I do remember that when we tried to ask for $8,000, my publisher said, well, your numbers for your last trilogy weren't great. So they will use any information that they have, even though it's supposed to be a new series with new marketing. And I will stress that I made the choice to take this deal. I could have gone to more publishers, but this was an instance of, what is the term using, going for the option book.
Right.
This was my option book for my publisher. And so the option book is your contract will have language that your next work will be given to them. But if you have a good agent, they will narrow it down. So it's your next work as Zoraida Cordova, your next work of middle grade as Zoraida Cordova, right? You narrow it down to the most detailed example possible. But at the time, it was just my next work, right? And that ended up being Labyrinth Lost. And I was scared to gamble. I was scared that because my publisher made me feel like a failure for that first trilogy, that nobody would want this book. So I was scared to do that gamble and to play that round of Russian roulette and to maybe go to another publisher and see if they would give me more money. And my agent let the decision up to me, and I didn't feel like we had a strategy. So I just said yes. And I don't regret it, because I think that that book did everything that it did for me. If it had gone to another publisher, it could have been buried. It could have been, you know, anything could have happened. So I'm not saying the amount just, you know, to make anyone feel bad for the book or because I'm upset over it. But now I see that my same publisher has paid other women, other white women, a fourth more than I was paid.
Four times.
Yes. Whose sales track was not better than mine.
Right.
Right. So I was being punished for a trilogy that was not invested in. Meanwhile, this other person is, you know, was in the similar situation, but for some reason,
they decided to invest.
They decided to invest and saw it as a more worthwhile investment. And that feeling, that's the feeling that I regret, right? Because I had a good job. I worked at a bar, and I did everything I had to do to sustain myself while I tried to become a writer. So it's one of those things in publishing that just kind of stings. You know what I mean?
Because I mean, that whole thread made me so nauseous I had to get offline.
And it was then like a card wreck. I couldn't look away.
Yeah. And then also it was so sad too You know, and this is my buddy, one of my white male buddies put up his numbers, and he writes kids of color into, like, as his main characters, and he's paid double, if not triple, what I'm paying.
It was, he gets paid triple.
He gets paid triple what I do for writing characters from my background. And he can write cross-culturally about Black kids and Asian kids, and he gets paid triple than what I get paid. And I just find that to be mind-boggling. And there's no amount of explanations you can give for me in terms of, like, oh, well, maybe it's the timing, maybe it's this or that, maybe it's racism. And so I think that this is the hard conversation we have to have about the bank, is that some people get to win and other people get peanuts and have to scrape and scrape and scrape. Why are, if I write 110,000 words in a book, why are mine worth 45K and someone else's worth 333,000?
Right.
Right. Why? Where are the metrics here? Why, where's the science to say that I'm not marketable, or that my book can't do as well?
Right. And then the people are going to use the excuse of quality, right? Well, maybe your books are just not as good.
I mean, I have trolls on the thread who are like, it's because your books aren't good. It's because you're not as good as her. Things like
I
that.
I will say, I will say that is a tool of white supremacy. And it's also a tool to excuse the behavior of publishers, right? To say to tell us who's a worthwhile investment and who isn't. And that's not fair.
Not fair.
I think that sometimes we look at these big advances and they're not always a great thing to have.
Let's talk about that too. There a little we go. Bit. Because something that our babe, Victoria Schwab, told both of us when we got into you guys got in together, and I came in later into the publishing industry, is that, you know, having the smaller advance that you actually earn out and then you start growing incrementally as your fandom grows means that you're not set up to flop and fail, right?
Yeah.
Your book doesn't go to Flop City's library because you're able to earn out your advance and keep growing your readership.
Yeah.
And it is something I'm thinking about because Miss Beverly Jenkins, who, if you've never read her fantasy, then you need to fix your life. The OG,
the romance queen,
said that big advances are like Sally Mae. Sally Mae is a loan company that, like, got a bunch of us with these school loans. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I always have to remember, like, of course I want the big advance. Of course, I would like to have the freedom to be able to pay off my credit card bills, to be able to give my parents some money, to be able to have a year's worth of rent just like just socking away, like, you know, where I don't have to have the stress and the anguish of money. But also, it is a loan. And so having that money as an advance versus as royalties is definitely a debate among authors. Royalties are not guaranteed, right?
Right.
So there's that too. That's the other thing. They're not guaranteed.
That's why I look at debut classes, right? The way that I was, you know, I debuted in 2012, Go Apocalypse.
Oh, dog.
And there were a lot of people who had splashy six-figure deals who just don't write anymore. And that's because they were never able to get another six-figure deal. And that's up to you how you spend your money. Like, if you want to buy $15 cocktails, buy me one too.
I mean, pink eyelashes.
Shut up.
So that's what your advance goes to. Mink
eyelashes. I have to maintain a lifestyle that I had while I'm working in my nightclubs, okay?
Okay, glamour puss.
Shut up.
But you're right, though.
But I'm right. And I think that I admire Victoria Schwab's career because she was not overpaid when she first was a debut. It was like, you have a beautiful book, here's some money. And then the fault was with the publisher. Her publisher failed her and her publisher blamed her. And then she had to reboot. And as she rebooted, she found her audience and she found her voice. And now she's the Victoria Schwab. And nobody can tell her anything because she has earned. I'm going to hate
that you said that, but yes. Yes. She, people call her an overnight success, but she wasn't. She like literally climbed up the ladder.
It has taken her a decade to be an overnight success.
Right. And so I also think that it's something to be said of, you know, working your way up, because what I don't want, and it's the way that I was raised, is I do not want a check that I can't cash. I don't want the bag that I can't earn out. It's my greatest fear to not be able to have the opportunity to make royalties. But I do want to be paid what I think is fair and what my work is fair and what I know I can earn out. Mm-hmm. So I want some place. I want to land someplace in the middle. And I hate that this feels so arbitrary. And that's where I think a lot of my pain, the pain and anguish comes from, because it's we're all sized up. It's like, oh, well, Labyrinth Lost, we're only going to give it this much money because we have this, once again, White Salem Witches. We'll give that $175,000 or $150,000. But these Latinx witches, no, we're going to keep it light and give a little bit of money. And that, to me, is where it's insidious. And that's what we're seeing. We're literally seeing whose stories get fiscally and monetarily backed up. We don't get to see who gets the marketing plan that is full of all of the bells and whistles. We don't get to see who's sent on tour. We don't get to see what kind of marketing is spent. So this is just purely in terms of who gets the big bag at the beginning in terms of the advance money. But it is part of the metrics. It's part of the whole metrics of having a book and getting a book deal.
Yeah. I used to tell people that you're not your advance. But it feels that way. This week it does feel like it. And that's really sad. So let's talk about an instance where a smaller advance is a good thing, right? We talked about how authors like Victoria have sort of earned little by little. They get higher and higher with each book. We saw in the case where David Bowles told us his number, and I can't remember the sum, but he said that he sold 50,000 copies of his book, so of Don't Call Me Güero. And so that in itself is earning him royalties. And so in that case, he's also with an independent publisher, right? And independent publishers give out smaller advances.
Yeah, he's in a small press.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I do think that each book has its own sort of lifespan, its own sort of particular needs. And what I do like about small presses is that you can get more individualized attention. You're on a smaller, more curtailed list. And I do think that you have some opportunities to earn out and receive royalties, which is always like a bonus. And is super nice. I just have a wish that I do wish that marginalized content creators are able to be able to afford to work. And what a big advance does is that it takes the pressure off of you and that you can really devote time to your work. It's like a little fellowship, right? Mm-hmm. You get that money in order to live. And some of us don't get to have that. So when I got my first book deal, for Tiny Pretty Things with Sona, who I have to split the money with, I had 3 or 4 jobs at the time because that did not pay the bills.
Right.
And because of the amount that we were paid. So I think that it is important to think through sort of who gets to live and create art and write and who doesn't.
Right. That's a serious question. I think that's something that all publishers should be, all editors should be having now that I see all of these messages on Twitter about opening up their inboxes to submissions by Black authors and authors of color, if you're going to put people on these lists, you need to invest in them. And money does talk in our industry. And so if you want to invest in authors, pay them money that can sustain them, and pay them money so that you can justify having a huge marketing plan, right? So you're saying, okay, we paid $50,000 for this book. Now we have to earn that money back. How are we going to earn that money back? What does the marketing plan look like, and how much money are we putting into the marketing plan?
Right. And then,
but that's another conversation.
Also, yes. I think that we've got to talk, and the thing that I wish that hopefully the hashtag spins into discussing agents and talking about your teams and talking about what they're asking for when your book goes on submission and when they get interest from publishers, how they press, how they push. And I think that what I've learned, and we can sort of talk about what we've learned from our advances and from sort of doing the money dance with several books now, some things that I've learned. One, I like to keep copious records of how much I get, how much I'm putting to the side. I do my best. I'm also doing a Hail Mary usually in terms of putting 30% away, because when you're not paid a high enough rate, that 30%, that again, that $11,000 is money that I need. And
for bills.
To pay for bills. And sometimes I
can't. And for my eyelashes.
Okay. Great. sometimes you can't put it all away. But this is something that Jason Reynolds told me that he does. And I think Walter Dean Myers told him. So he's paying it forward. He said to live off of your advance and save your royalties for retirement. And so that's what I'm trying to do now, where I'm like, okay, I have this much for my advance check. This is my salary. This is my money, my income to pay my bills. And if I get royalties, that's bonus money that I'm not guaranteed and I can't count on, that I don't know what's coming every quarter. I'm putting that away to the best of my ability. Right now we're in a pandemic, so nothing's getting put away because I lost so many school visits this spring from it.
Yep.
But that is what I'm trying to work towards my rhythm.
Is it fair to say that if you are unhappy with the money that you're getting, that you have to have a serious conversation with your agent?
Absolutely. You need to talk strategy. You need to talk numbers. You need to talk sort of career and placement and what you're trying to do, and look at the market. Because again, a lot of things your agent can't control, but they can ask. You can always ask for the right kind of money.
Yeah. And if your agent is afraid to ask, then maybe you need new representation.
Right. And if your agent doesn't have strategy, thinking through how do we build you out of house? How do we build you from one book to the next? Looking at patterns, then that's a problem. I do think that we have to get more strategic. This is a business. Thinking through, how do I grow and keep leveling up with each book, both in the quality of my work, but also in how much I'm getting paid for my work.
So what is our takeaway from this big, very big discussion that it needs a lot more nuance, but hopefully we're giving some understanding as to how advances work and how these negotiations look. What is your general takeaway from all that's happened this week in the world of publishing?
Oof. I think my takeaway is that Black authors and a lot of Latinx authors are grossly underpaid in contrast to other groups in YA and adult sci-fi specifically. That's all I'm looking at. Those are my zones: adult sci-fi, fantasy, and also YA and kids books.
Mm-hmm.
We are grossly underpaid. And I think that we have to start thinking about why our stories are deemed less monetarily sort of desirable. They're given less gas to get them going. They're paid less. Unless there are a couple of big properties, of course, that are diverse, that have diverse content creators, that have been given the big money, and they function as tokens. And it's like, I wonder if the industry believes that if they invest in two or three tokens, that that makes up for paying everybody else peanuts. It's like, oh, I have my one Black friend. I have my one Latina friend, but I don't need anybody else, right? And so I think it's also, we have to arm ourselves as writers with information. And so now that you know that you are gross, you most likely will be lowballed. Come in with top-notch work and have an agent that has a plan and that is thinking through that and knows that before they even start heading out the gate. And so I think that that's something I'm going to be talking to my agents about, because I was so upset with seeing all of those numbers and thinking about how underpaid all of my projects and my company projects are.
Right.
And it makes me sad about the fact that kids of color and books about kids of color are invested in less. But again, yeah, it makes sense. Our communities are invested in less. We are paid less, period. Right. Even in jobs that are not writing. So right, it follows the pattern.
I think that my takeaway is that I want to make sure that up and coming writers know that their books have value, and that they need to be looking out for their best possible advocates. I think that one of the things that I say all the time is that we look at publishers as if they are doing us a favor, where we are giving them content. Without authors, publishers would have blank pages, right? There's always going to be somebody to publish, right? That's an understanding. And All of our structures are competitive businesses. Every single genre competitive. But in order for you to say as a publisher, as a company, that you value these people's work, that you want to see these names on your list and these stories, you have to put your money where your mouth is. And you have to have the team that can support all of that, so that you don't say, well, we already tried that book, but it didn't work. And the thing with all of these advances that has me really, I don't want to say shocked. Shocked is not the right word, but neither is sad. It's an in-between feeling.
Yeah, it's like a malaise. It's like that something hits you. It's just, whew. It's like a bitter, it's melancholic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a melancholy.
And again, it's not that we want people to feel sorry for us. It's just we want everyone to see and to take note of all of this and this moment in publishing.
And hit us with all your money questions. We're happy to answer as much as we can. Obviously, it's very hard to talk about money only because there are some clauses in a lot of our contracts that make us unable to do so. And but just in terms of the basics, happy to answer them. Tweet us on Twitter at @deadline_city, or hit us on our Instagram, hit us in the DMs at @deadlinecity. Or send us an email, deadlinecity@gmail.com. And we will answer particularly your money questions. And we'll put that stuff on the show notes so that you can contact us and we can do some sort of maybe follow-up Instagram story talking about this, because I think that we can't talk about money enough, especially for marginalized content creators who are trying to figure out how much their stories are worth.
Absolutely. So we hope you enjoyed this episode. Check us out on Patreon and our Ko-fi, but also buy our books. And we will see you next week.
Deadline City is part of the Frolic Podcasts Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts.